Hello there and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast today, the 30th of January 2025. Big thanks, by the way, to all those people who pointed out last week how I said it was November at the start of the podcast. The silver lining there was at least I can say we've a tentative and engaged listeners. Johnny, did you not notice me doing that last week? You didn't want to jump in and correct me?
I did notice it, but I'm very polite, so I just felt it was...
It would have been such an easy edit to just say it at the time. I go back, I redo the intro, and away we would have gone. But look, anyway, here we are. Apologies for not coming to you yesterday as we normally would on a Wednesday, but we decided to hold off until we had some team news ahead of this Saturday's first game of the Guinness Six Nations. And that team news is in. The notable calls in Simon Easterby's first team announcement as Ireland interim head coach. Sam Prendergast gets the start at out half, a Six Nations debut for him. He pairs up with Jameson Gibson-Park. Jack Crowley is on the bench to play England. Bundy Aki and Gary Ringrose then in the centre. Robbie Henshaw at number 23 on the bench. Mac Hansen holds off Calvin Nash for the right wing place in the starting team. James Lowe and Hugo Keenan complete the back line. Ronan Kelleher is at hooker and Dan Sheehan is ready and available off the bench after making his comeback from an ACL injury last week. Andrew Porter and Finley Beelam are the starting props as expected. Joe McCarthy is out injured. We will find out just how injured a little bit later on. Simon Easterby is about to begin his press conference at the Aviva Stadium. So Tadhg Byrne and James Ryan are in the second row. Ryan Baird gets a big start at number six ahead of Jack Conan and Cormac Isichuku and Peter O'Mahony as well. Plenty of options in that back row. Caelan Dorris then and Josh van der Fleer complete the team as usual. Johnny, let's start at out half because Sam Prendergast starts, Six Nations debut, Jack Crowley is on the bench. While Crowley has definitely come into this window in better form than he probably entered the Autumn Nations series, it does feel like Prendergast starting is the expected call that we had been preparing for the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think so. And then even in terms of kind of media stuff throughout the week, over the last week, Simon Easterby says himself at one stage, I think it was early this week or late last week, that, you know, Sam had the jersey in the, you know, he used the phrase, you know, Sam had the jersey in autumn. I know there was still, decisions to be made around that, but, you know, he is, at the moment, he's first choice, you know, in the three major games, you know, the last three games, he started the last three games and have all been big tests for him. Including this one. So this is kind of, they were always going to go full hog or what they think was full noise into this. So yeah, he's the starting out half as of this week.
It was it obviously was such a big call and dominated the news cycle for days and probably weeks on end around the Autumn Nation series. But you can probably see now why Andy Farrell actually did go ahead and make that call back in November, as unpopular as it was in some quarters. Because if you think about it, like if Andy Farrell hadn't made that call to give Sam Prendergast a start in one of the bigger games, it would have been very difficult for Simon Easterby to go ahead and do that in this Six Nations. To, you know, if Simon Easterby, the interim head coach, was to be the one that all of a sudden would jettison Sam Prendergast into a starting jersey, that would be seen as a huge deal in the media. And you'd have to think on some level Andy Farrell was kind of aware of that, that his interim, he'd be leaving his interim head coach a little bit out to dry, or just not really giving him the flexibility to make more choices as to who his kind of like starting out half would be. That's not to say that Jack Crowley doesn't come back in at some stage in this tournament either. It just means he was essentially giving Easterby as many options as he wanted.
Yeah, I think, and you know, like this is a Six Nations in the lead up to a Lions where, there's a lot of opportunity for lots of guys leading into what is going to be a summer tour where there will be a certain amount of changes. So you can look at it from two points that, you know, they had this tag for a while, given, you know, what Sam had done on the Emerging Ireland tours and his performances for Leinster. And then you look at it that, you know, in a 4-year cycle, it's kind of now is the time to give them a fair opportunity. And then his performances and his standard of performance has probably propelled him to being, the number one And that's the reality of it. And there's going to be a lot of talk over it and a lot of, I suppose, disagreements and difference of opinion. But the opinion of the coaches is, and since the autumn, is that Sam is first choice, is their number one. And you move on with that. And on form, probably is the right one. I know Jack has played really well the last couple of European games, and hit that form again. But I've been saying it ages. Let's just enjoy this battle that they're going to have for hopefully for a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, you can absolutely make the case that this battle makes both players better rugby players in the long term as well. It was interesting. We were in Portugal across kind of la the end of last week and into the start of this week, where Ireland were doing their media sessions. Lovely little trip to get at the end of January. Bit of warm weather typing ahead of the Six Nations, but we did kind of get to see the first few minutes of a couple of training sessions, and it was very notable on Saturday morning how Easterby, you could see him. He pulled aside Sam Prendergast and was just talking one-on-one with him for probably 5 to 10 minutes before training started. And then in on Tuesday, you could clearly see how Prendergast was obviously one of those first players out on the pitch. There's always a big thing in Irish rugby circles, and we always hear Irish rugby coaches about how an out half runs a week. And Johnny Sexton always spoke about it. It was always, coaches always spoke about how good he was. And it was something that was mentioned around Jack Crowley as well early on last season when he was taking it over, that he was running a week really, really well. Back in your playing days, was the running a week concept a big thing? Has it always been a big thing? Is it just I only ever really hear about it from Irish coaches and Irish players. I don't know how big a thing it is outside of Ireland. Has it always been a big thing for an out half to run the week? Or could you give us an idea of just what that entails?
Yeah, well, I think they're essentially the quarterback. They know the plays. They run the attacking side of the ball. In terms of my time at Leicester, at the start, it would have been Goody running those kind of attack meetings, having those conversations, asking those questions, and trying to balance. And then Paddy Howard trying to balance the player involvement to his own involvement, and then it would have gone on to Floody then for the last 2 3 years. Toby Flood would have done it, and sure Rog, for the first 2 years, Keats then as well. But they're an integral part to your attacking framework, how you want to go after the week in terms of what your strategy is. And then it's the connection that they have to the heartbeat of the team, which is the line out callers. And you find that they will interact really well. They'll understand what the calls are from this area, that area, and they'll be able to pitch map the whole way through it. So it's important that those guys show that strength, and ultimately they have to have the biggest level of knowledge within the whole team, because they need to be able to talk to everyone and coach everyone around the pitch. So I think that's probably what they do. And in phase, the nines and tens, they run the attacking show, and they have to know all the moves for everyone. And I think it's just that clarity that they can give, and that calmness that they can give in terms of their knowledge, that is so important from the attack side of the ball.
Just checking an update there. Simon Easterby's press conference is going on. I might move it on to the second row because, as I said, Joe McCarthy misses out. Turns out McCarthy picked up a concussion in training this week, so that's why he isn't involved this week. Hypothetical situation though here. If Ryan Baird plays very well this weekend, blindside flanker, and Ireland's line out hits the mark, which obviously has been an issue for quite a while. And we've seen obviously how integral the line out is to Ireland's attack still, even when it hasn't been functioning hugely. So many of Ireland's tries are still coming with the line out as the primary source of possession or the entry into the 22. If it all goes well this weekend, and obviously Ryan Baird is a good line-out operator as well, and you've got James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne in there. Could Joe McCarthy have a bit of a job getting back into that starting team?
I don't know, because he's been kind of that leading light in terms of the physicality edge that he's brought over the last number of years since the World Cup. And generally, some coaches might have the value that if he was going to start, that due to an injury, he'd start next and then they'd make a decision potentially on the third game. I don't know whether that is the case, but some coaches used to nail their colours to the mast on that, at the start of every season. But for me, I think Joe McCarthy and his performance and his physicality that he gives, particularly at the defensive breakdown in terms of his barging and all of that for Leinster, I think he probably starts. And then it could be a case that, James Ryan might be coming off the bench or what, or do they move Byrne back out and go with himself and which is what we probably expected with himself and Ryan and stuff. But I do think that Joe McCarthy's performances in terms of the physicality and his dynamism around the park for such a big guy that can move, I think he probably lends himself to being in that starting team.
Yeah, big opportunity for Ryan Baird as well. He's had a tough season, had a couple of concussions in back-to-back games, both within kind of like 60 seconds or 2 minutes of coming onto the pitch as well. It was a really frustrating start for the season for him. Mad to think like back in December, he was out there getting 40 minutes with Trinity in the All-Ireland League in your division 1B as well.
I think it's actually really cool for kind of the pathway and everyone who plays within or coaches within the AIL to see that it was used in that way in terms of the process associated to getting him back. There was a clear plan in place. He's going to get 40 minutes. He came off the bench, played his 40 minutes, then built up through Leinster European games and then gets a start. I think it's absolutely class for the AIL in terms of its usage in this, I suppose, what was a test case for him. I think it's really, really cool for anyone involved. And, they played Blackrock that day. How cool is it for those Blackrock lads, sitting down to watch the game over a pint tomorrow and say, well, I actually played against him, like only 6, 7 weeks ago. I think it's deadly. I think it's really, really cool.
Literally, just as we were talking there, it did pop into my head. I remember it was probably back in your days with Munster. I have a memory of Paul O'Connell coming back after a really, really long injury and playing a game at Young Munster. And obviously Paul O'Connell, I mean, wouldn't have played with the Cookies in years and years to that point as well. And I just remember it being such a big thing around Limerick that week. Can't even remember when it was, maybe 11, 12, 2013, something like
Yeah,
that.
I think it was after his when he was coming back from
Was it a
his
back injury?
I think his groin injury, I think at the start. But there was about 2,500 people in Croke Park in Thomond Park. I think it's moved the game from Cookies out over to the Thomond Park. And then there was another weekend, my first year, where the game initially was cancelled due to weather because of snow in Italy, and we were all released to play. So I think we played Shannon that weekend, and Felix and Marcus played, and myself and I played for the Cookies with Keats. So there was a couple of weekends that did happen.
Yeah, it just would be so great to see more of that coming as well. Even actually thinking about it, Cormac Isichuku was playing a huge amount, like a good degree of rugby with Ballinahinch in Division 1A up until he finally got that run with Ulster and all of a sudden into the Ireland squad in the summer. Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. We'll come back on track. Tadhg Byrne, is he a better second row than he is in the back row? It was interesting. He was up for media this week and we were asking him which he preferred, and like a smart player, he definitely didn't confirm which one he preferred. He kept the options open. But reading between the lines, you got the sense he definitely probably does prefer to play in the second row. He said he's probably more involved and gets on the ball a lot more as a second row, whereas if he's playing number six, he's kind of out in the wider channels a little bit more. It does feel like he's able to influence a game better when he does have the number, whether it's four or number five on his back.
Yeah, I think, look, I think Tiger's world class, but I think he's an even better world class second row than he is at six. And I think that at six, probably in terms of how Ireland attack and keeping their width and trying to have two guys in the 15 as much as possible in the open. And generally, that's the six in that position, or can be the two, you know, it can be the hooker, depending on what happens off those lineouts. I think having him in between the 15s, and particularly then in any transition defensive stuff, it allows him to get, you know, to get in on the ball more, get his hands on the ball more than attackingly, because he's in the 15 rather in between the 15s rather than being in the 15 and you're waiting the ball to be kicked or passed there. Yeah, I think that he's such a good player, but I think for me, he's absolute world class in the second row. You know, he's a world class player, but I think in the second row, I think it's where he can be really destructive at breakdown, and I think being in the second row just allows him do that on but in both attack and defence.
And then just the second row spot on the bench, Ian Henderson gets the nod over Cormac Azuchukwu. Obviously, Peter O'Mahony could have been considered for that spot as well, even though Jack Conan's also on the bench, because you've Ryan Baird starting in the back row and you've the option, you know, that's your extra second row option as well. What do you think would have tipped the scales in Henderson's favour there? Is it an extra lineout option?
I don't know, because I
Because
think in
obviously O'Mahony as well, sorry, Ned, even as I'm just kind of speaking out loud.
yeah, I think for me, this is probably one of the decisions that I would have preferred if they went with Azuchukwu. I think that this is the one where you look at it and go, oh, I think this could be a missed opportunity. I think it's probably just an experience thing. England at home first up, he'll probably want that experience coming off the you know, coming off the bench. Jack Conan gives you that, you know, test line coming off the, you know, so, and probably same with Henderson. It just gives them that bit, probably a bit more experience coming off than throwing someone in. You know, if Tadhg Furlong had got through with his calf, you would imagine Beelan would have been coming off the bench and not Clarkson. So their hand wasn't forced in that position. But I just think that it would have been, it's something that I would have gone with that younger, more dynamic kind of second row six in Izichuku coming off the bench. I just think it could give you more, just more attacking, you know, not flair is not the right word, but dynamism off the bench, I think, in terms of what, you know, if potentially you're looking at, you know, if Baird comes off and Conor goes into the back row, you can then put Izichukwu into the second row, which gives you what you've lost by Baird not being on the pitch, if you know what I mean. It's that
The athletic
ability,
profile.
yeah, that athletic profile to make that break and actually finish a break if they may do something in the middle of the park or in the wider channels. I just think it might have been a bit more, not balanced, but a bit more dynamic and athletic bench in terms of what you lose when Baird is going to probably the one be coming off for Conan, you know, like it's barring an injury.
So looking across then over the back line, James Lowe starts on the left wing. Probably would have been expected. He did look really, really sharp despite his layoff last weekend when he played with Leinster. Hugo
And I
Keane
think
have
when fit, his left foot
Yeah.
just gives Ireland's exit game, everything. It just gives them more control. And I think that's what it is. And I think that if you're trying to find someone else with that left foot, you're looking at Jimmy O'Brien, probably not as big a boot on the left. I think Jamie Osborne can play on the wing, but he's a centre. playing on the wing. You know what I mean? Like, even though he's played there a bit over the last couple of months, he does have that cannon. But I think you're playing someone out of position to fit that left foot. And that's, I think when James O's fit, he plays because that's just such an extra string to the kicking threat that Ireland have with his left foot on the pitch.
Then over on the other wing, like we mentioned Calvin Nash last week, we said he would be considering himself very unlucky to miss out. He does miss out. He will be considering himself very, very unlucky, particularly because you obviously end up with Robbie Henshaw on the 23 shirt, and because Gary Ringrose can cover out on the wing if needed. That's where it kind of gets tricky from an Irish point of view, and for it's obviously just a numbers game, but it does feel like Mac Hansen needs a performance soon. I know obviously he's come off the ban as well, but even throughout the season, he still looks like he's missing that little bit of a spark that he had pre the shoulder injury last New Year's Day. He kind of still feels like there's a bit of trepidation there, and it does feel like he needs a performance this weekend.
I think this was probably another money in the bank selection in terms of what he's given Ireland over the last couple of years, particularly ahead of before his shoulder. I agree, probably that spark and that bit of frustration kind of came out probably in the whole interview post Leinster and the suspension and all of that. But he is someone that, this is a game built for him, like in terms of the pressure, his ability to spark something out of nothing, and what he gives, he gives probably more passing and kicking ability than Calvin Nash does in terms of when he often pops up behind shapes in the middle of park and they'll go crossfield off him, use him as a kicking option over to the to both sides, and that's probably just a little bit of extra to him, that where Calvin Nash is more of a real, as he has been, an incredibly busy winger that pops up on inside shoulders, and where Mac Hansen's probably just a bit more creative, and he can finish too, obviously, but where you describe Calvin Nash probably more as that real busy finishing style winger. And I think just in terms of how Ireland like to attack, they have, when they're in full flow, they have multiple ball players, multiple kicking options, and that probably why he gets that, probably is a bit of a money in the bank selection in terms of form currently.
Yeah, there'd be I'm sure we will be talking about that selection over the next few weeks as well. Other bits like Dan Sheehan, but like it says so much about how incredible a recovery Dan Sheehan has made from this ACL that he's on the bench this week, and yet there was you could have made a decent argument for him to actually be in the starting team. We were all wondering how was he going to get on last week? Was he still going to have that spark? He was absolutely outstanding against Leinster last week, and if anything, looks like he's actually packed on a few kilos as well over the last
Great
6 months.
to say, yeah, he looks incredible, Nick, like in terms of shape, body shape,
He
power.
looks, sorry to interrupt, like, he looks like someone who has actually just got like a well-earned rest rather than is coming back from a long-term injury.
And I think probably after, the season and everything that they had at post World Cup, probably just refreshed everything, mind, body, and soul, in terms of what that, and as difficult that recovery, having done it myself, it's a grind. The first 3 months, 3.5, 4 months up until you kind of start running straight lines, it is an absolute monster grind. A lot of time to yourself with the physio. But it does give you an opportunity to kind of get every single other little nick or anything, knock that you have, get sorted and get into the full fit of your health. And then the last kind of 2, 3 months where you're really starting to ramp up physically, you're feeling great. Great condition. As long as all the rehab and everything is done, you're going to have days where you need to get caught awkward in a position in training for you to realize, that, okay, I'm stable. I can get on with myself and you're secure. And once that happens, then, you're any kind of you being tentative in any way just goes, and but you need to have that moment. And it just his pace last week in those wider channels, like that's just what he gives you, and he's a footballer too, so catching cross fields, offloading those channels, again, if he stays fit, for me, you're probably looking at the starting lines, Hooker, if he stays fit, and just if he just continues on from where he was last Friday, he's going to be in a great spot and a real added power and strength coming off the bench for Ireland.
Yeah, it's brilliant to see him back. Last bit specifically around this team selection. No Tadhg Furlong, obviously. From what I can see from Simon Easterby's press conference, he says they're not concerned that this is a long-term issue. It's a minor bit of a calf problem. It's obviously a blow not to have Tadhg Furlong available, but as you know, compared to 2 years ago when Finlay Beelan was thrust in for the start of the Six Nations, I think there's a strong degree of faith in Finlay Beelan being able to do the job as a starting tight end for Ireland. Now, there's no fears around that. The silver lining, obviously, is that this presents an opportunity to get a bit of experience in a big game into someone as well. And Thomas Clarkson is the person who's named on the bench. And I think so. I find sometimes when players are a little bit later to get the breakthrough with Ireland, we forget about. We kind of treat them as kids regardless of how old they are. Like Thomas Clarkson's 25 in a few weeks' time. He's no kid. He's, in terms of rugby ability and rugby experience, he shouldn't be fazed by stepping up to the bench for a Six Nations game. So it is probably good from a long-term point of view that another player is getting an opportunity in a game like this, as much as it's a blow not to have Tadhg Furlong.
Yeah, well, look, it's another experience in a pivotal position for, and he's not young, but in terms of front row, he probably is, like in terms of his development as a, as you said, 24, 25-year-old. So he now, and that 20, 25 minutes is really important. It'll be. The game will probably be in the melting pot there, and he's going to be up against a really good scrummaging unit in terms of, and an experienced unit in terms of what England have. And yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. Finlay Beelan had a good autumn. He had to go on for, one of the games when he came off, he had to go back on, and he just. He was just absolutely gassed, God bless him. But I think we're in a decent spot there. And what Clarkson again brings, power, physicality, and his scrummaging is going to be tested. And that's how younger players learn. They have to be thrown in, they have to be given an opportunity, and they have to deal with, but he'll be coming off the bench with Ireland's most capped player, most experienced player. So hopefully Keneally can give him that security, be a bit of a security blanket, and Dan Sheehan as well, with him packing down on his left side when he does come on. There is a very two very experienced guys in him that can help him and make sure that he is looked after when it comes to scrum time. No doubt around the park he'll add something on the pitch, line out time, all of that. It's just scrum is where the real test and battle is going to be for him, but he'll be well looked after by who he's coming off the bench with.
Yeah, and I think he actually really was. Clarkson was impressive in the couple of games he got for Ireland. Arguably more impressive for in those couple of games for Ireland than he has been for Leinster. Obviously, he's got about his business, but in terms of Ireland kicking on from November, then the one of the big issues, obviously, in the All Nations series was the clunkiness around the attack and the high error count. We were speaking to David Humphreys a few days ago, and we asked him, is he confident that those issues have been ironed out? What did the review into the campaign say? And one of the bits he said is that they are quite confident at the moment because if you look through game by game, they probably have more players coming into this window who are in a little bit better form than they might have been heading into November. Is that too simplistic an argument to make, or is there a good degree of merit in it?
I think there's a good degree of merit in that, purely on the fact that every game they played, even the New Zealand game, they had 10 or 15 minutes where they got to full flow together and they looked really good. You know, like there was a moment 10 minutes after halftime in the New Zealand game where you go, right, that's it. They're going to put the foot down and then kick on. And they didn't. The same in the other games, that 10 minutes was 15, 20 minutes, and then they end up kind of clinging on in other ones. But I think the group being a bit more settled, and then obviously having, you know, the last 2 weeks together, I think that will allow a lot more kind of flow, to their attack that comes from their line out launch. And yeah, I just think everyone will be a bit more comfortable with each other, and I would expect them, with the way England defend in terms of how they go about it, are they going to stick to the blitz and do what they have done, or are they going to just kind of change that up a small bit? I think it's a good start for Ireland in terms of getting into flow, getting into a match with the emotional intent of playing England at home. I think, you know, the emotional charge of what that brings, I'd expect, you know, and Ireland are a team that if they can get into flow for 25, 30 minutes, they're probably potentially they're one of the top two teams in the world when they're in that space.
Yeah, like hitting the ground running is like it feels like a very obvious thing to be saying, obviously, but you look back at November and just the nature of that start against New Zealand, a lot of it just kind of carried through the rest of the campaign, some of the frustrations. Whereas if you look back over the course of the last few years, getting a big start in campaigns is something that this team have actually been quite good at doing. You think back to Marseille last year, you think back to the World Cup campaign that they were primed nicely, 2023 Six Nations as well on top of that as well. And of course, those other November campaigns as well. The discipline and the cards, it's something we've been talking about quite a lot over the course of 2024. Like the trend is remarkable as to how Ireland's discipline changed, going from three yellow cards in the space of 29 games to getting 11 and 11.
I do actually think this is a bit of a Jack Nienaber effect, to be honest. I think that it's just we're going to back our D so much, and they just have that mentality from the Leinster lads that they're on edge all the time. And like, look, they're still winning games, putting themselves in positions to win. Bar the New Zealand one, obviously this season, you know, they drew a series in South Africa. They won the championship last year. Yeah, I just think that this is it's a breakdown effect of what Jack Nienaber has brought to Leinster in terms of just being on the edge. Now, Steve Borthwick has already kind of questioned a couple of things in the media around, oh, well, what they do a breakdown and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, they've had the referee a number of times over the last couple of years, so there's something that's going to be familiar with them. Don't think that's going to fluster any referee at that level, despite, you know, everyone knows what they're doing there. But yeah, it's so fine a line that sometimes they cross it. Like, that's the reality of it. And they back their D for that, but it's just to be on the right side of that line, is the important one for Saturday.
And I like that you said that as well, because that was the theory I've been coming to over the last while, where we spent so much of last year asking questions of the Irish coaches of, oh, you must be getting frustrated now at these high penalty counts. And I think when you look back at the numbers over the course of last year, the actual penalty count itself on average wasn't too high. It was just over 10 a game. Likes of New Zealand, South Africa were hovering around that same mark, around 11 as well. It was the cards that were the big jump. And to the extent that you look at it and go, there has to be something in this. You do get the feeling that they probably looked, I'd say they probably looked back over the course of those previous seasons where they were hardly getting any cards whatsoever, compared to everyone else. And I do wonder, did part of them think, are we being a little bit too honest here? Are
A
we
bit too
being
nice,
being a little bit too clean? And we put it to James Ryan earlier in the week that how, like, just how much do you have to play on the edge? How important is it to tricolour as close to the lines as possible? And he said, like, you cannot go into a game of test rugby without being willing to hit those boundaries and
Cross the line.
occasionally go over those boundaries. And if that means you pick up a few yellow cards along the way, Ireland can still point to they had the best defence in world rugby last year. They conceded 12 tries in just 11 games. They gave up the lowest points per 22 entry over the course of the season as well. So, like, I do think there is an element of it doesn't actually matter too much if we pick up a few extra cards. What is the net gain of it all? Will we
Yeah, no.
actually ultimately come out right in the aggregate?
I think I would agree with that. The only thing for me is there are a couple of changeable ones where you look at a couple of roll, particularly the roll away and the contact ones in the autumn. Ian Henderson had one, Philly Beelham had a couple, and there's obviously a number more. Those ones are the ones that if they can scratch them and get out of there quicker, because they're ones that they're very controllable. You're not trying to be on the line there in terms of that's just not doing something quick enough. If they can get rid of those couple, then the entry from the halfway line to the 22, that goes out and you're back in your physical edge and the contact there, where I think that those couple of ones are the ones that were probably frustrating some supporters. And I think that's if they get rid of them, then all the other ones are like, yeah, fine, we take them and we back her and we get after it. And that's how you have to be. You have to be willing to go to that dark place sometimes. And this weekend at home, I'm sure no doubt they are gonna cross the line a couple of times, no doubt.
I do wonder who it was and when did it happen that someone came up with the 10 penalties is the magic number. If you're under that, you're doing well. If you're above it, you're not. It does feel like that number has probably crept up a little bit over the course of the years to maybe a 12 or 13, based on what the best teams are doing. But anyway, we'll park that one for now. On England in general, really hard to know where they are coming into this because over 2024, there were signs of progression. They obviously beat Ireland, and that was a massive shock. And then they go to New Zealand in the summer. That blitz defense under Felix Jones was looking really, really good. And they were very unlucky not to pick off one of those games over in New Zealand. But then you fold that into November. They get a handful of defeats over the course of that month as well. And they were conceding a lot of points. The defense against Australia looked really, really sloppy. But also they were under some new coaches as well. Now we're coming into this Six Nations campaign, and the word on the street is that they're abandoning the blitz or going blitz light. I think Steve Borthwick might have been kind of saying it's not quite abandoning the blitz; it's a different kind of blitz. I actually just really don't know what to expect of them this weekend.
Yeah, I think look, it's a huge pressurized game for, I wouldn't say necessarily the players, but I would say for the coaches. There's been
And
a lot of talk.
would that make you wary of England?
No, because I think there's been too much change, I think, within that defensive system. And yeah, if they're going blitz light, then fine. It's not a blitz. It's just probably square up 13-2. It's very similar, fairly basic what other people are doing. So they're just going back to what most other teams are doing in the thing with the potential have thrown an odd shooter in there. And that's probably, Ireland, when they get into flow, I think that's a good defensive system for them to attack into. The But when you look at the pressure that they, what could happen, and you listen to kind of media outlets over in England, and you read what they're saying and stuff on podcasts, like they could be, you know, two from two going into third game, all weren't great, or they might be zero from two going into third game, and it might be like if they don't win this, Steve Borthwick getting the boot. You know, like it's that kind of. Where one from two, okay, fine, yeah, let's go. So it's just, I just think it's an incredibly pressurized environment for all of those coaches there, just the way the English media is, the issues that the RFU have had and all the Bill Sweeney stuff. It's, you know, like it's just a lot of pressure coming to Dublin. There's an emotionally charged. Will they see it as a shot to nothing, or will they see the potential consequences of the first two games as a potential, as potentially too much pressure for them? So it's, yeah, it's not something that I would be overly worried about at all, but it is something that I'd say is on the backs or on the shoulders of the English coaching staff.
Yeah, like I do think there's an element of danger with them, particularly with the bench where you've got like Ollie Chessam, Cunningham South, and Tom Willis. There's actually they've got a lot of punch on
Their
that,
quality of player.
on that replacements bench. But I think the fact that Ireland got caught on the hop last year against them, I'm struggling to see how Ireland get caught on the hop against them 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I think like they've incredible quality in that squad. Like, you know, I just think that you know, I just think there's so much change, and there's still a team that will say we're kind of transitioning a bit and finding our way attackingly and all of that. And even the fact that there were some people not sure whether he was going to pick Marcus Smith or not at 10 is, you know, it's a bit different to what, you know, the battle has been for Ireland in terms of Crowley was number one last year. Sam came in and in the autumn, you know, there was a question, but in reality, we probably all knew, but it's a conversation where they're going to go at each other. But Marcus Smith just brings a style of attack that is it against ultimately what Steve Borthwick, how he likes to play, potentially. So it's just something that, yeah, look, it's going to be interesting to see how they play attackingly and how they go after it, whether it's going to be controlled pressure game, maul, kick, pressure, and then back their D, and how they are going to defend. There's a lot of kind of unknowns within the English kind of team play, but I don't think it's one. I'm not worried about a massive England performance. I think even if they do bring a massive performance, I think Ireland will have too much. I just think in terms of the form, the European form that the Irish 23 are coming off, the majority of them, and into camp.
Right. So, in terms of predictions, I'm taking it you're going Ireland on Saturday. Yeah, I think I would as well. France Wales opening things up on Friday night. Like, it's hard to discuss this game and, you know, present it as an even contest. I think everyone will be leaning France there as well, and Scotland without Sione Tuipulotu. The mood around Scotland has kind of changed in the last 10 days or 2 weeks. They've obviously picked up a couple of bad injuries. Still probably would expect them to beat Italy, and I suppose probably the how far in the tournament they go then depends on next week at Murrayfield against Ireland.
But I think Tuilapato missing is just massive for them. Like, he is their talisman, and he's been in incredible form. It's a huge, huge loss. So it's one of that's the. You know, that's something that's really going to hinder their chances of what if they had a full strength team, you'd be going, oh, they've a chance in terms of the, you know, who they're playing and where they're playing them. And then yeah, it'll be interesting to see back to the first one, but I think you're right in terms of the, you know, the Friday night game. it's hard to see where Wales can kind of go from. Again, they're changing coaches. They brought Adam Jones back in. Alex
Yeah.
King has kind of, moved on and was kind of moved aside very quietly and politely in terms of, there was no big thing. And then Adam Jones was front and center all week in terms of press. Yeah, they have to try and get what they can, but it's not a nice start for them. And this could be a real difficult Six Nations for Wales. Like you look at,
Away
you
to
know,
Italy.
yeah, like that's the one that they're like, well, we have to win that. And then how are the bodies going to be when they get to that stage? All that stuff. Scotland, I think, if they were fully fit, I think they would have been potential contenders in terms of where they're playing everyone and the way the fixtures lie. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Italy go. They've obviously, Zebre have had a couple of wins, that win last weekend. All of that kind of builds them up to hopefully having another good Six Nations and trying to maybe get a couple of results. You'd go for Scotland on that. And then, yeah,
Who
France.
wins the tournament?
Oh, I don't.
Does it come down to Ireland against France in Dublin?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I think. And do you. Yeah, it's probably a grand slam based on the winners of that game, in my opinion.
Right. Not sure. Not so. You're not sure who wins, but you reckon who does is doing a slam. Is that the way of saying it?
Yeah, I think it's a one score game, France, England, France, Ireland, and the winners of that win a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
I think I would be along that line as well. Last one for you. You're dusting off the boots tomorrow night out in Energia Park in Donnybrook, the Ireland England Legends match.
Yeah, I have to find those dusty boots because they were worn once, well, twice last year in the Ed Slater 7-4-5 game and the one over in thing. So hopefully I'll find them. If I won't, I'm sure I'll figure something out. It's not look, it's great fun. It's for a couple of great charities, and an opportunity for everyone to kind of get back together and have a bit of crack. The game is like any game that you play. At the start, of now we'll take this easy, and we'll look after each other, and there'll be no problem. And then someone scores, or you go down a couple of scores, and sure, the competitive nature gets the better of you. Now no one will be taking anyone's heads off, but you still do want to try and come out on the right side of it.
I am fascinated as to the like what is the competitive nature of those matches, because when you look at the team sheets, like there are some people in there who have been retired the guts of 20 years. But they're like, just looking at the Ireland team sheet, I saw it the other day. You have fellas like Tiernan O'Halloran who just retired there 6 months ago, like who very realistically could still be playing competitive or professional rugby at a high level.
Yeah, well, last year Luther Burrell played, and to be fair, he like was literally just out of the pro game, and he was actually taking it very handy on us all now, to be fair. But the thing with Tiernan and say Tiernan is quite similar to Tom Varndale, still being really good nick, and they still have their speed. So like I think having played with Dawsey and Lester, Tom Varndale, he I think he scored four tries or something, because if he gets any type of ball in any type of space, it's just like, best of luck. So speed is the big thing. If you can hold on to I think Niall's playing for us as well, so hopefully he'll kind of man mark Tom and see how they get on in terms of the speed battle there.
I'm not sure if you've seen like the full England squad list or team sheet or whenever that's out. Off the top of your head, if you get thrown a hospital pass that you're reaching up in the air to catch, who is the last person on that England team you want running at you?
Probably like Dylan Armitage can still bang, and he
Oh,
plays with him.
that's a good way.
To be fair, the likes of Matt Banahan will kind of tickle your ribs and then have a bit of crack with you. All right, he played in the 7-4-5 game. He's good fun. For me, it's great to catch up with all those lads that I played with and against over there. Like all those English lads are they're great, great blokes. Like Ben Woods and Tom and all those Leicester lads that are coming across. It'll be good. One thing is for sure, it'll be a good night out anyway. That's guaranteed anyway.
Yeah, so that's if you are around Friday evening, Energia Park in Donnybrook. What time's kickoff? Can you remember?
7 o'clock. It's only kind of 30 minute half, so short, sharp, try and get you in with a point in your hand as quickly as possible after the game. So, but it's always good fun, and it's for a couple of great charities.
Yeah, absolutely. What a better way to start your bank holiday weekend as well. Johnny, that was great. Thank you very much. We'll speak to you again soon. Reminder, you can follow a live blog on Ireland against England in the Guinness Six Nations Saturday, 4:45 kickoff on RT Sport and the RT News app, or listen to live commentary on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1. Our live game on RT2 and RT Player, Scotland against Italy, 2:15 p.m. kickoff, 1:45 p.m. on the air. See you then.